Good morning, everyone. Do you ever read a book and the book's good, the book's interesting, the book's fascinating maybe, but just maybe two or three words jump out at you, hit you like a brick, and they're not even in context, they're just words that the author used and he thought they were just part of the little story he was telling, but they just jumped out of the page and made sense. Or actually, in my case, didn't make any sense, but got me perplexed. And I've been on a bit of a journey the last few weeks with a couple of others, trying to work out what this group of words meant. And I hopefully can share with you some of that today. And the words were, we are defined by grace and refined by challenge. Defined by grace and refined by challenge. Now, I'm only going to look at the first part of that phrase today. What it means to be defined by grace. Who are we? Let's start with that. Who are we? Not who do we think we are, because we can answer that quite readily. But who are we in the eternal time frame, the spiritual time frame? Who are we created to be? That person, whoever they are, the born again, raised from the dead, you, me, is how God sees us now. That person defined by grace is how God sees us now. If there was any advantage, any blessing, any joy, any peace in considering who we are as God sees us, then let this be an introduction to that thought that we are defined by grace. If there is a hint in our heads of our definition of grace, that grace is an unmerited pardon floating around in our spiritual psyche, we've all got some catching up to do. If that's what we think grace is, that it's an unmerited pardon, that's not an inaccurate term, but it alone severely understates what God's grace is and what he expects to accomplish with it as he covers our lives with it, drawing us all back to himself. One basic expression of God's grace shows us all being totally unworthy, yet we receive God's grace anyway. His favour, his mercy. We can never deserve God's favour and pardon. He extends it to us through his grace. There is no time that we can serve to work off our sin in order to expect or deserve pardon and a clean slate. So who we are, who we really are, who we're intended to become, who we are for eternity is meant to change what we believe and what we trust in now. Hence that imagery that Paul uses about the old and the new man, the alive and the dead man. We're not intended to be dead to sin and still waiting for that new life. The new life has already begun, but only as much as it seems we want it to. That new life has only begun as much as we want it to. God sees us through his Son, that one perfect sacrifice that made us clean forever. So we're not smeared and enveloped by our own sin. As Paul explained, it's the old man that is dead and does the wrong thing, that still wants to do the wrong thing and please self all the time. We find that in Romans 6. It's a transition from old to new, from dead to alive, from sinner to guiltless, from physical to spiritual. That is grace written all over it. Grace defines the new you, the alive, the forgiven, the reborn you and me. Grace has set us free from the bounds of self, from the bounds of physical, and transferred us to a new place, the kingdom of his Son. A new man, that reborn man, that new life is the one now defined by grace, not by sin or the limits of self and any good that we might be able to do here and there. By default, we define ourselves by what we see, what we know about ourselves, and our place in the world we live in. We know what we're good at. We know what we're able to achieve and what we're not. We know what we've done over our lives. And it may give us some joy and some satisfaction, knowing that we've worked hard, accomplished some good things and helped people a bit. Maybe made a difference in lives for the better. But let's plug all this into a story that we know well. What it means to be defined by grace. The prodigal son had a father who defined him by grace. The son saw what we tend to see, ourselves, our situation, our self-centered lives. The father saw what he could be. He saw a potential impossible by our physicality, impossible by our will, our talent, or our knowledge. He saw a life enabled by grace, the impossible made into a reality. Even the son never saw that when he returned home. He imagined a new life reformed, made possible by special effort and hard work, trying to redeem himself, to somehow undo the harm and hurt that he had caused and the wealth that he'd squandered. He thought, I can fix this. To somehow endear his father to him again and provide him a new life that was at least an improvement on the one that he found himself in, on the one that he had earned for himself with his errant decisions and mistakes and poor judgment. See how the son defined his life? Much like we define our life. He'd made some mistakes, some terrible mistakes. They were now an indelible feature of who he was, of how he saw himself, a failure. He was confronted by his life and his undoable mistakes. Poor judgment, ill-mannered self-centeredness, sinking to unthinkable depths of helplessness. The only glimmer of hope left was through what he knew in his father, a kind man who just maybe, just perhaps, would take him back with at least a job he could do, as a servant, as a hired man, not a loved son again, that would be too much to ask or even contemplate. No point in getting one's hopes up. He burned his bridges and could only hope for, not even expect, a little human decency from a dad he'd hurt so badly. Let's see how the father saw him. How the father saw his son. A son is a son is a son. He's still his son. A special important part of who he was as a father. He was only a father because of his sons. They are an extension of who he was. His love for them was immense, intense, unshakable. Defining them through grace was fundamental to that love. The willingness to forgive, to put the past behind and move on, to live like it never was. Oh, it was all right. There's no dispute about that. That's what caused the grace to be so full, to be so all-encompassing, so expansive, so totally persistent. God has allowed this place, this world, these lives, to experience such sin, such depths of utter hatred, such all-consuming selfishness and despicable depravity, so his grace might be all the more profound. God's grace is just too big to cover a few simple mistakes made by accident. We're all tied with the same brush as anyone else on this planet. We're all self-centred creatures, beset by sin, and we live in a world and a system designed by the chief sinner of them all. A world overflowing with deceit, with lies that reach into the very fabric of our being. So how much do we see life through our eyes and through the thoughts and attitudes defined by the world? Just like the lost son, he took his standards from the world. What I want, what I can get, what I can do with money, what sort of a fun time can I have at someone else's expense? The need to satisfy self, the need to get the most, to live life the highest. But when all the wheels fell off, he still saw it with an attitude of, I think I can fix this. Actually, it was more like, I think Dad can probably fix it. But not in a way that he would or could. He wanted Dad to fix it by his own faulty methods of reasoning and his own dodgy standards that would never accomplish any long-term good or resolution. Our lives defined by grace look totally different in every conceivable way, and a few other conceivable ones too, from the normal world view. We're made in God's image. No one can change that. And apparently God's capable of blotting everyone out from existence. Not that he wants to, because he wants to save them all, beginning with us. He wants to restore all, to be united with all. As Timothy chapter 2 tells us, who desires all men to be saved and to come to the knowledge of the truth. God defines us by grace. And he doesn't do things by halves. It's not half law and half grace. It's not salvation by our efforts and Christ's. Romans 6 again. We are defined by what we can't do. We're defined by what we can't do. Because God, through Christ, can. That's how he sees us. That's how we're defined by grace. He is, and he will, keep doing it until we make it. Not because we deserve it, but because we live under grace. Which leads to what happens when we fail, when we fall, when we trip over, when we make a mistake. When we mess up again, what does God do when we fail? Does he condemn? Does he abandon? He can't, because he defines us by grace. Grace covers everything, always will, until the last son comes home. Every story in our Bible It's about men and women who failed. Who messed up. Who made tragic and severe mistakes. Bad judgment and willful errors. But the real story is how God worked with them, covering them in grace, forgiveness, mercy, love, and leading them through to better days. Better days surrounded by more truth and less by error. Romans 8:14, now walking in the flesh, as these people did, as we do, is being defined by our own abilities, our own talents, our own strengths, and they always let us down. But walking in the Spirit is letting God's grace define us, His strength, His wisdom, made perfect in us, because we are frail and faulty and subject to making a mess of it. Our failures should lead us to God. Because we're defined by grace. We don't see our lives through our own eyes, where we want to fix things, where we want to make up for the mistakes we've made. When we're defined by grace, we don't worry. We don't stress. We don't get anxious about our life and the state of it. We certainly don't give up. Because it's not us who is alive. It's Christ who lives in us and His overwhelming grace. We're defined by Him who lives in us. Made possible by grace, we are in Him and He is in us. And we can never earn it, never deserve it, not for a millisecond.